We start our second hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome, live in Southern California, and this program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Leonard Hamilton joins me momentarily. Meantime, Antonio Brown apparently saying goodbye to the Steelers and their fans, but that may not necessarily be the case. Remember, he's under contract still. More on that story in a minute, but as promised, we are joined by the head basketball coach at Florida State, the winningest coach in Florida State history. Three National Coach of the Year awards, two-time ACC Coach of the Year, two-time Big East Coach of the Year, led Florida State to the Elite Eight last season. They're number 17 in the AP poll now, 18-5, overall 6-4 in conference, and Florida State is hosting Wake Forest tomorrow night. We are joined by Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, buddy.
Good, good. Great to hear your voice. So let me start here. You beat number 16 Louisville in overtime on Saturday. That's a game where you fell behind early on. You went 16 of 24 from the line of regulation. You made six straight as part of an 8-0 run to start overtime. So how pleased were you with the way your guys stepped up when it mattered most?
Well, there's no doubt that that's the analogy. We stepped up when it mattered most. We have so much more room for improvement with this team, and that's probably the most positive thing about us is that we've been able to win a certain measure of games and not necessarily feel like we're hitting on all cylinders. We've had so many moving parts with Phil Kofa having a stress fracture, missing like 13 games and then coming back and trying to get the rust off. And kids, we've had several games where some of the things that everybody else has, we just got bone bruises and strains and flus. It just seemed like it all came at one time. Now we have some measure of health. I can see us slowly getting in sync, and I think before too long we might be a pretty good basketball team.
Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton joining us. That's good news. Now you've got Terrence Mann. He went 5-for-5 from the line in overtime, part of a 20-point game. Afterwards, he was saying that the experience of being in pressure moments like that over the course of his career prepared him for that moment. How valuable is it for you to have a senior leader who's got that kind of experience?
Well, we have five seniors on this team, and four of them guys who have been with me now for 4 years, and we have one transfer in. There's a certain level of maturity with this team. We're still not executing in our half court as well as I think we should, but I do see it coming together. You know, we've been a little inconsistent shooting from the perimeter, but there's no doubt that Terrence's leadership has been paramount to us. He and Phil Kofa have really given us a great locker room type guys that I think it's going to mean a lot to us down the stretch.
You know, knowing you a little bit, shots are not always going to fall, but defense is always going to hold up if you play it. The other thing about that comeback is you force 23 turnovers and you score 32 points off those turnovers. You and I always talk about defense when you're on. How important is it to have a game like that where you can show your young guys this is how defense does win games?
There's no doubt, because we were not executing very well. We were kind of stumbling with just not being totally in sync. But our defense held up, and we got down, I think, almost 10 points. We fought back, and then they made a surge there toward the end and went up 7.5, and then we cut it again, and then they went on almost a 9-0 run, and we were down 10 again, and we regrouped ourselves defensively, forced some turnovers, got some easy baskets, hit some free throws, and came away with a much important victory.
Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton joins us once again. Earlier this season, Coach K said something really interesting about your program. He said that when you play Florida State, quote, you're not playing against a team, you're playing against a program, and a program has certain values, end quote. What's your reaction when you hear that, and how much pride do you take in the fact that you're not a team, you're a program, and a program with values?
Well, there's no doubt that we've had to win games by committee. I haven't had the luxury of having, you know, three, four, five McDonald's All-Americans, one and done people. We've had a few along the way, but not at the level that a lot of the ACC teams have. So we've had to develop a culture of guys that win by committee. We've had on the offensive end that we've had to have a lot of guys that are capable of contributing. And maybe sometimes we have not maybe necessarily have had, you know, the top players, but we've had all good players, and good players playing together committed to a system has been fairly well. And we try to develop a junkyard dog type mentality, you know, where you're just protecting your yard. And we've been very fortunate. I think we're like 4-4 and 2-3-3, I think, over the last number of games we've had here. So we've developed a culture. Our kids like playing with each other. And we always seem to be a team clawing and scratching and clawing to move up. So we developed a pretty good culture. We've got great following. Most of our games are sold out. So I think that, you know, we're really, really moving our program in the right direction.
Florida State basketball coach Leonard Hamilton joining us. You know, Leonard, ESPN did a piece on you last month that is one of the best and most inspiring things I've read in a long time. I know you're not looking to make it about you ever, although I could have a whole conversation about just you. But let me just ask you this. The story goes that when you were coming out of college, your plan was to join the Marines, but then you were offered an opportunity to be an assistant at Austin Peay. What was that experience like for you?
It was the most unbelievable experience that I ever could ask for. I mean, I was a graduate assistant, Jim, and then January, the full-time assistant coach became ill, and all his responsibilities fell on me when I was 6 months removed from playing college basketball. So as he left, he had to resign in January, and even though I was a graduate assistant working on my master's degree and I wasn't a full-time assistant, I had all his responsibilities, and my head coach allowed me to go on the road recruiting in April when I didn't have a credit card. And I was able to go on the road, and really I was very fortunate to recruit two kids that broke all the records at our school when I really didn't know what I was doing. But I had the distinct pleasure of working for a guy named Lake Kelly. Lake Kelly, I tell you, made such an impression on me on how to deal with players, how to deal with the environment, how to hold everybody accountable, but also how to care about your players and treat them as human beings. And I learned so much by just being around him and being a part of with a guy who really, really cared about every facet of his kids' lives, his players' lives, going to class, getting the education, giving them those conversations that teenagers need to grow into young adults. So just having the opportunity was great, but having the opportunity to work for a guy like Lake Kelly made a huge difference in my whole philosophy.
We're talking to Leonard Hamilton. That is something. And then when you were 26, Lake Kelly starting to get interest from other bigger schools, and you're killing it as an assistant and a lead recruiter. So you went to the university president, Joe Morgan, to ask about being the next head coach. What was that conversation like? And when you think about it right now, how does that make you feel?
Jim, that's a tough moment for me. I still get emotional when I think about that. And I really don't talk about it a lot because, you know, I had done all I could do, and it really hurt me. It was just like it cut my guts out. And listen, and the good thing is that President Morgan and I had a great relationship, and he was in my corner. He hired me, and he made things nice for me and my family. But he didn't think that he was strong enough because he was going to retire in 2 years for me to be the first black head coach there. And I have to admit, one of the very few times in my life that I didn't really handle it very well. I mean, I was so hurt and disappointed, and I was 26, but the thought that at 26, I actually had the confidence to go into the president's office to see, and I actually thought I could be the head coach, and it wasn't any doubt in my mind that I was the guy and I needed to have that job, and I was going to do a good job, not thinking about there were very few black head coaches in the business at all. And that was on a Wednesday, and I resigned on Thursday and moved out of my house on Friday and went to work for Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina on Monday.
Leonard Hamilton joining us. And then an amazing thing happened, Leonard. You said that, it's a quote now, as a young assistant, I wanted me a great job. I wanted to be in a job where all the players are. But after a period of time, God reached down from heaven to say, you don't need one of those good jobs. In order for you to be significant in this basketball world, you need to take a job that nobody else has been successful at, end quote. What was it like then when you had that realization?
Well, you know, as a young assistant in Kentucky, you know, and I was there for 12 years, and I stayed there a long time, even though I had a lot of opportunities, because I wanted to be synonymous with the success, and they were already winning before I got there, so I wanted to be part of that, and I wanted to learn what it was like to build a program of that stature. And I foolishly was looking around at jobs that were easy. I mean, jobs that had already had some success in good cities with good programs and great tradition. And I just came to my senses one day and said, you know, it's almost like I tell people, like God reached down for heaven and slapped me on both sides of the face and said, bam, bam.
Right.
Those jobs don't need you. You know, what does a good job don't need you? And if you're going to, it's like if I was going to be successful in the business, I need to be able to go somewhere and prove that I was capable of doing something that no one else had been able to do. And so I was very fortunate to have an opportunity to go to Oklahoma State from Kentucky. And they, I don't think they had been in the postseason tournament something like 30-something years. And so that was – and it wasn't in a metropolitan area. You know, I couldn't go across town and recruit players in Stillwater. I had to figure out a way how to get kids to come to a remote part of the country in a good conference with good coaches and a good league, and I had to figure it out. And so that's what I needed, you know, to develop some level of confidence that I could do it at this level, and I could not have asked for a better opportunity.
Yeah, so you shifted your thinking, and let me finally say this, because it was so important, not only to you, but to others. And I say that because you're not going to sing your own praises, but your former players and coaches will. As an example, Stan Jones, he's been with you for more than two decades. He says that because you had to pave your own way and take on challenges that would intimidate other people, you've done it your own way, and that for that reason, you've paved the way for others to come after you. Is that the way it feels to you, and then how does that make you feel?
Well, you know, that's for other people to acknowledge. I think along the way, I just developed the confidence to do it the way that I thought it was best, holding everybody accountable. I'm most proud of the fact that in 25 years, you know, in 26 years, we've only had five kids not graduate that were seniors, that have been with 4 years. And so I realized the importance of getting the education, holding kids accountable, and making sure that during that most important time in their life, at 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, that they got the information that would give them an opportunity to be successful as young adults. In later life, you know, you get them at teenagers and you turn them loose at young adults, and it's important because your job is not really evaluated, Jim, until let's say 5 or 6 years after these kids leave you. You know, what kind of husbands, what kind of fathers, what kind of neighbors, what kind of citizens are they going to become? And you know as well as I do, a lot of these guys, we emulate what they see their college coach do or their high school coach do. And so you have to set the example. And so trying to hold everybody accountable, trying to teach them the do's and the don'ts, trying to, you know, make them understand that, you know, that life will be life after basketball and the air's going to go out of the ball. And, you know, and that with the attention that they get and the exposure that they get, you know, they're held to a high standard. You know, you can't just be like every other student. You really got to conduct yourself in a way that's above other students, because you represent not only your personal family, but your school, your alumni, and your reputation and your future, because everything you do, you know, you're in a fishbowl existence. And so with that, you have to be on top of a lot of things. Because with social media and all the issues that we deal with in our society today, our kids are so vulnerable, and you have to make sure they understand that, you know, these are the things that we're going to hold true and hold everybody accountable for. And I'm fortunate that our players have always responded.
Well, that's the truth, isn't it? And you don't need to be a head coach. I mean, certainly in your position, it's so, so critical. But as a parent, I tell my kids the same things. It's a different time. It's a challenging time. And you got to hold people accountable. He's the head basketball coach of Florida State. He is a three-time National Coach of the Year, two-time ACC Coach of the Year, two-time Big East Coach of the Year. And Florida State's number 17 in the AP poll. I always look forward to that conversation. I consider him a good friend of the program, Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, so good to have you back. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jim. Anytime, I'd love to be on your program.
Great having you on the program. Love having you on the show, too. Leonard, have a great day. Great job. Florida State's 18-5. They're 6-4 in conference, and he said at the very top, hey, we can be so much better. We're getting better, and we can still be better. And they're number 17 right now in the AP poll. Again, they're at home against Wake Forest tomorrow night. All right, so let me reset you. When we come back, I want to get into Antonio Brown, whether or not he is done in Pittsburgh. Him saying goodbye to Pittsburgh on Twitter does not mean that he is done with the Steelers. Not yet. They still have his contractual rights. Meantime, the Lions want no part of Hard Knocks. It's kind of funny to me that the Lions are dictating terms to anybody about anything. Nah, we're good. We just go deal with the Raiders over there. The Lions saying they should deal with the Raiders. And never mind that Matt Patricia's right. The Raiders would be a lot more entertaining than the Lions. But the Lions should be happy that anybody has any interest in them at all. This is what happens when you miss the postseason back-to-back years. They can come and get you to be on that program. We'll hit that. I want to talk more about the Devin Still interview that we had in hour number one. Kareem Hunt signing with the Browns. Hoyer the Destroyer deserves credit for the Patriots winning another ring. All of that still ahead and your phone calls. But first, I need a quick break and then we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Antonio Brown's on Twitter. And he tweeted, quote, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward. Peace emoji, hashtag new demands." So I don't know about you. I get a little tired and worn out trying to decode tweets and posts, trying to figure out and decipher these cryptic messages. Except that's not what's going on here. They have his contract still. He can't just decide that he's done. He can't just say goodbye. Adam Schefter tweeted as much earlier. He says, quote, "Antonio Brown has not been traded, nor has he been released, but Brown wants a trade, and he officially has requested that from the Steelers, per source." I'm not saying that he hasn't already played his last down. I'm not saying that ultimately they don't move him along. I'm saying that just because he's tweeting a thank you to the Steeler Nation and saying goodbye, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's over. And again, I'm trying to ask you Steeler fans, how do you want this thing to end? What do you want to see happen? Have you had enough of this guy? And are you ready to move on? Are they going to be fine without this guy? In fact, does the negative now outweigh the positive? Is he no longer worth it? Or is a guy who's good for 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns every single year always worth it, no matter what he says or what he does? At the Boomer 18 tweets, Rome, "I hope AB is fast and elusive enough to avoid the locker room door headed at his ass." He's both those things. Mike D for three tweets, "The Browns trying to emulate the Steelers is nothing new. They even have their own AB-like distraction in Hunt. Good luck with that." I will get to that story momentarily. Rome, "If AB said it on Twitter, I believe it." Signed, "Steelers fan, still waiting for that Instagram interview with James Harrison." KC, New Hampshire, "We're all still waiting for that." Remember, James Harrison promoted that, teased that. "I've got the sit down. I've got the interview coming up." And we're still waiting. Again, because that hasn't happened doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It only means it hasn't happened. In the meantime, others around the NFL are trying to recruit him. At Can't Guard Mike, Michael Thomas, blue check verified, tweets, "If at AB84, really leaving, man, Pittsburgh about to be funny looking next year." And he's got two crying emojis. "The truth always come to the light. Pay attention. He opened up everything for the passing game and still got his." This is a guy clowning them openly. "If at AB84 really leaving, man, Pittsburgh about to be funny looking next year." How's that taste, Ben? He's got a message for you, Ben. if you're about to lose your number one, keep in mind, they're not going to be that funny looking. They've already got another number one to slide right in Juju Smith-Schuster. They're not going to be that funny looking. Sort of funny looking, but they've already got another number one. Which, by the way, isn't that part of the problem? Isn't this part of why AB is so unhappy anyway? Because he knows there's a young number one who's ready to take over? That he's not getting the looks that he used to get prior to Juju showing up? But anyway, I'm more taken by the fact that Michael Thomas is just putting it right out there. If AB84 really leaving, man, Pittsburgh about to be funny looking next year. The truth always comes to light. Pay attention. He opened up everything for the passing game, and he still got his. And isn't that part of what AB was accused of doing? All right, you want to see what it's like without me? Go ahead. This is what it's going to be like without me. 1-800-636-8686. Steeler fan, or are you concerned about how that offense is going to look without him? Or have you seen enough and you want this guy to hit the bricks? Let's go to Tulsa. Grant in Tulsa. Good to have you, Grant. How are you? What's up, Grant? You're on the air.
Hey, number one, going to buy Iafredi a house in Long Beach because I don't want him in Tulsa.
Iafredi.
Iafredi, yeah.
Yeah, Iafredi has a house. He doesn't need your help with a house.
Oh, I thought he was... Okay.
Ah! That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I'm sure Iafredi is going to be very happy to know, Grant, that you're going to buy him a house. Let's go back to that for a minute. So Grant in Tulsa calls up and says, I mean, guy sounds like he's 70, but he's giggling like a 13-year-old girl. I'm going to buy Iafredi a house in Long Beach because I don't want him in Tulsa. Let me try and unpack that for you. Iafredi is extremely successful. Iafredi has an extremely prominent position in the community. And believe me when I tell you, Iafredi has a roof over his head. I know it to be true. He doesn't need your help, Grant. I think that you're talking about Ira. Ira, at last check, was on the streets. Ira was homeless. He says by choice. And even if it weren't by choice, Grant, like Grant in Tulsa said, you know, I want to buy Iafredi a house. I'm well off. That's what he told Hawk. And then before I could ask him why, he said, because I don't want him in Tulsa. Yeah, I don't think you need to worry about either Ira or Iafredi coming to Tulsa, Grant. Why would Ira do that? I think Ira's tripping around the LBC like, man, kind of sucks not having a roof over my head. I should probably go someplace else. Long Beach is not for me. You know where I want to go? I want to go to Tulsa. Why would he do that, Grant? I got a better question, Grant. Why would you call me? Why would you call this show? And why would you offer to buy Iafredi, of all people, a house? What's up, Grant? You're on the air.
Hey, number one, going to buy Iafredi a house in Long Beach because I don't want him in Tulsa.
Iafredi.
Iafredi. Yeah.
Iafredi has a house. He doesn't need your help with a house.
Oh, I thought.
My man could not have been happier with himself than he was with that joke.
No.
Damn, Grant, you nailed that one.
I don't like that call.
Man, Grant, you nailed that one. You have not been giving yourself enough credit lately, Grant. Damn, Grant, that was funny. Grant in Tulsa. Man, he just could not wait to get on the air and say that. Hey, Grant. If you're going to come on my show and crack a bum, at least get the bum right. Come on, Grant. That's exactly what this show needed today. A bad call. I'm going to buy Iafredi a house because I don't want him living in Tulsa. Wow. 1-800-636-8686. Canadian Hitman tweets, I changed my name to Iafredi, signed Ira. All right. Anyway, Jared Allen is going to be the subject of my podcast. ESPN reports that Antonio Brown has officially requested a trade. That's fine. He can. It's well within his right. It doesn't mean he's gone. So when he gets on Twitter and he says, thanks to the Steeler Nation, that doesn't mean he's gone necessarily. The report is he has requested a trade. We'll see whether or not they accommodate that request. They don't have to. Anthony Davis wanted a trade. That didn't work, at least not yet. Grant in Tulsa called up. That didn't work. Jake in Buffalo tweets, Jim, tell Jay Stu to get rid of that silly cat tattoo. Thanks, Grant in Tulsa. I mean, it would have been like the stupidest call anyway. This guy just calling up like, hey man, tell Iray that I'm going to buy him a house because I don't want him in Tulsa. I mean, it's just like the stupidest thing ever. But what made it worse was he thought it was so awesome. He thought it was like the funniest thing ever. And what made it worse was he got the guy's name wrong. He got the wrong guy. Never have I seen so much wrong packed into 5 seconds. And if Grant Tulsa's wrong, none of us want to be right. Because that was so fun. When we return, I will get control of my talk show. Rip it from the likes of Grant. Take it back. Make it my own. Give me back my show, Grant. Man, Grant just could not wait to make that call, and it couldn't have gone any worse. Come on, Grant. Stand back. Watch this. Hey, Rome. Tell your boy Iafredi I'll buy him a house. Because I don't want him here in Tulsa. Woo-hoo! Rack me, I'm out. Damn, Grant, you're good, dude. Ask you. Daniel Jeremiah coming up next hour. We are open phones between now and then, but here is a sports update for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Regarding Antonio Brown, P2 is in. Patrick Peterson tweets, yo, at AB84, hit my line. So he's recruiting.
Yo.
AB84, hit my line. Right. And especially if they take Kyler Murray, right? Now it's just getting away from us. Again, AB84 may not be done in Pittsburgh. Just because he's saying goodbye to Steeler fans on Twitter does not mean that he is done in Pittsburgh. Stephen Crowtown tweets, Kyler should have chosen baseball. If he played his cards right, he could have gotten paid for years. 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 Regards, Bobby Bonilla. Dennis Gilbert negotiated an amazing contract for Bobby Bonilla. Bobby Bonilla gets that payment every single year, and I think until like the year 2098 or something. Crazy like that. All right, let's go to the phones. I normally would not do this. I want to talk about the Lions and Hard Knocks, but my man goes right to the front of the line. He's a made man. He doesn't wait, ever. Let's go to the PDX. Trapper. Brother. Trapper, how are you, bud? What's up?
Hanging in there, Jimmy. Good to hear your voice again. As far as the sea bug, the PSA jumped 20% last week, but we're under 15, so we're battling, looking at stem cell treatment, but geez, the costs are up there. More important, my takes on Bob Costas and the recent revelation, but it actually begins in 1980, and I'll try and make this short, but I just driven 2,500 miles to start law school in the OC. Lifetime lover of baseball, I hear NBC has decided to break up the game of the week with Kubek and Garagiola, and pairing Joe with Vin Scully and Tony with some no-name kid as the B-team. I write a nasty letter to NBC Sports head Tom Watson expressing my dismay. I CC the letter to Kubek, who sends me a short note of appreciation. 2 days later, I get a handwritten two-page letter from that no-name kid saying how much he loved the game, presenting all his bona fides, and saying how he and Tony were never going to be anybody's B-team. That no-name kid's name was Bob Costas. In the last few days, we finally got the reason for, I guess, NBC pulling Costas from announcing the 2018 Super Bowl 6 hours before the broadcast. He got told in no uncertain terms that he, quote, crossed the line with his comments linking football and brain damage. You got to wonder, Jim, which owners picked up the phone and called in the green light hit on 86ing him at the last minute. Just wanted to say a belated but overdue shame on NBC for putting money before the truth of the NFL's not-so-secret dirty laundry of brain damage. Last, major kudos and gratitude to Bob Costas. From the Olympics to, good Lord, thoroughbred racing, boxing, I think 11 Olympics, football and baseball and more, for my money, he's been the most versatile and best sportscaster of our time. He went out the way he came in when he cared enough 40 years ago to handwrite that letter to some no-name kid cracking the books in the OC. One last thing, a shout-out to new jungle friend, Lady Clone Bella B, for her kindness and support. You rock, babe. Tramps like us, Jimmy. Thanks for the dime.
My man, great to hear your voice, Trapper. Well done. Very well done. Trapper talking about Bob Costas. Bob Costas, a Trapper, if you don't know, and he touched on this at the beginning, Trapper has been battling cancer for quite some time, going to war for quite some time, and just still grinding through it. And a longtime friend of the program, longtime friend of mine, he goes back. Nobody, and I'm saying this before you rush in to do what some of you inevitably will do, nobody has had this show's back over the years to the extent the Trapper has. Literally nobody. Nobody has battled for this show the way that guy has. Nobody has battled for the clones and the jungle the way that guy has. Nobody has battled for me personally the way that guy has. Just know that before you come in and do what you generally do. And he mentioned that he wrote that letter to NBC, taking apart Bob Costas, that no-name, that youngster, and that Costas wrote him a two-page letter. Costas is episode 2 of the Jim Rohn podcast. Listen, I don't really get into other broadcasters. I don't talk about that. I don't make that my business on this show. You know, I know what I like. I know what I don't like. I know what I respect. I know what I don't respect. For my money, I tend to agree with Trapper. There's never been a guy who's done it better than Bob Costas. Bob Costas is brilliant. Bob Costas. Nobody was ever better at what he did than what he did. And I got to admit, that was awfully strange the way that played out. I mean, nothing's forever. You knew at some point he'd have to pass the baton to somebody else. It just seemed awfully strange that he went the way he went when he went. Like, still on his game. I mean, he lost nothing. Still on his game. I mean, you might not like his commentary. You might not like the way he editorialized on that program. You may not like his point of view. But I'm here to tell you, he had lost nothing. He was good. Really good until he stopped doing it. It just seems so bizarre the way it came to an end. I mean, they had a chance to get Mike Tirico, I'm sure. They probably want him to be the guy, the next guy. But for Costas just to kind of disappear the way he did was so strange and so bizarre. And now we know. Now we know. ESPN did a piece, and the story is that he had a commentary about concussions and brain damage. And that NBC did not want him to go with that. And that he crossed the line with that. And next thing you know, he was just ripped off the air. And he had never said anything publicly. And we were just all kind of left to wonder, like, damn, well, what happened to Bob? Where's Bob? Does not sound like Bob just walked out on his own. It's like clouded in secrecy. And now we know. So that's why Trapper made that phone call. And I just want to reiterate what Trapper has meant to the program, how long he's called this program. Back in the day when we did tour stops, multiple tour stops a year, Trapper was in the middle of every single one of them. Sometimes for the good, not always. Trapper, man, he was a wild man back in the day.
I'm Trapper. And you're not.
But then again, we all were a little bit wild back in the day. Trapper, brother, from me to you, keep on fighting. Jungle's got your back. I've got your back. Bella B's got his back.
30 pieces of silver.
I like it when the jungle comes together. I'm all for jungle, clone-on-clone crime, and beefs. But when we all need to come together for something, be sure you're there for it. And that'd be one of those things. So it took a minute for Matt Patricia finally to dial up his best defense since taking over the Lions, and he did. Before I get to that, Adam Hawk, is this a phone call that I want to take? That's a no. So if you're one of those people on hold, I might be talking about you. too bad Matt Patricia, you know, the defensive genius, finally dialed up his defense, and it came in the middle of February, an entire 6 weeks after Detroit finished DFL in the North. But better late than never, I suppose. Yesterday at a members meeting with season ticket holders, Matt Pat was asked about the Lions appearing on HBO's Hard Knocks this upcoming year. The question came up because Detroit is one of five teams that the NFL can contractually force to do the show. There's actual criteria. And yes, the Lions meet the criteria. So do the Raiders, Redskins, Giants, and Niners. Except Matt Pat wants nothing to do with Hard Knocks. Wonder where the hell he got that attitude from. Wonder where that came from. How very, very hood of him. Except this is not New England. This is Detroit. And when you miss the playoffs in two straight years, you're eligible for that year or for that show. So for the first time in a decade and a half of his coaching career, Matt Patricia might have a reality TV show roll up on him. And like I said, he doesn't want it. And he said as much yesterday before adding this, and I quote, "I think John Gruden is an excellent choice for that show. I think the Oakland Raiders and everything they've got going on right now would be fantastic viewing for everybody to watch." End quote. In other words, y'all can get the hell off my lawn. Go bother Chucky. Lions GM Bob Quinn said the same thing. Quote, "Nobody wants to do it except Oakland." End quote. The Lions, of all teams, verbally flexing on HBO is pretty rich. The same team that gets routinely clowned on Jeopardy for being terrible forever is the same team who's too good for pay-per-view. That's rich. That's hilarious. But to actually stand in front of the media and run some misdirection and straight up deflect on the Raiders is actually pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
I got to respect that, because in this case, the Lions were actually right. The Raiders would be a hell of a lot more entertaining than the Lions. 3 hours on a Sunday is plenty of run for the Lions. Hell, last year, it was way too much. But I'll take all the silver and black that I can get. Mark Davis getting his signature chop at Fantastic Sam's. John Gruden trading his best players from his couch while he battles vertigo. Both of these dudes starring in an episode of Love It or List It, where they debate staying at the Coliseum for another year or moving to Santa Clara to pay the 49ers rent.
So, and are you going to love it?
Or are you going to list it?
I mean, that show writes itself. The most interesting thing that happened all year in the D last season was Matt Pat scolding a reporter for not sitting up straight.
Well, you know, do me a favor, just kind of sit up and just like have a little respect for the process. Every day you come in and ask me questions and you just kind of like, you know, give me this. But I mean, like, just be a little respectful. I'm asking just to be a little respectful in this whole process, okay? So ask me a question professionally and I'll answer it for you.
That's incredible, man. Even Bill Belichick doesn't do the media like that. And he's Bill Belichick with 8 rings. That's an amazing moment. I'll give you that, Matt. It's an amazing moment, but nobody needs to see that on Hard Knocks. Consider the season HBO is coming off of with the Browns, Baker Mayfield, battling Tyrod Taylor, Michael Kendricks getting released for insider trading, Brad Paisley putting the team to sleep with the world's worst pep talk, and more. Yeah, I wouldn't want to follow that either, especially if I were the Lions. I'll finish that thought momentarily. Daniel Jeremiah, next hour. Your phone calls straight ahead. Stay tuned.